Welcome to this Market Commentator podcast. My name is Ryk van die Kerk and my guest today is Reinhard Rood. He is a fund manager at Investec and runs, amongst other things, the Investec Equity Fund. Reinhard, welcome to the show. We are indeed living in interesting times for markets and our South African political landscape. But what is currently keeping you awake at night?
So hi there, Ryk. Look, I think there's certainly more than one thing keeping me awake. The one thing is probably that equity markets have had a very good run. I think it's far harder to be very bullish about risk assets, say, versus a couple of years ago. And to some degree, that is reflected in the positioning of some of the multi-asset funds that I co-manage. If I wind the clock back 2-3 years ago, we had a very heavy positioning in favor of kind of equity markets or risk assets. And today we are a lot more cautious. The earnings outlook looks a lot more fragile. The ability of central banks to positively influence markets seem to be running out of steam, for example. And then, I think currency markets are very interesting and it's had a profound impact on the behavior of certain asset classes and asset prices. We've been fortunate, I think, like most of our competitors or peers in South Africa, to have had a very healthy exposure to kind of non-rand assets or offshore assets. Multi-asset funds, in the local equity funds, we've had a fair amount of rand hedges. And again, you look at kind of the rand and the immense depreciation of the last 2 years or so, and kind of I just wonder whether that's likely to continue at the same pace, and kind of if it doesn't, what is the impact that it might have on some of the other assets like commodities and SA domestic stocks. So quite a lot of question marks.
But the dialogue currently is very skewed towards the health of the US and the Chinese economies. And small pieces of economic reports or data or new indicators can move the market across the world. Gerard Lampen of Sanlam iTrade recently tweeted that he wishes that things would calm down a bit and that companies could be valued according to their earnings expectations and not about dodgy economic forecasts. Is he right?
Look, I think it is a good observation. I think the markets have become extremely sensitive to macro data, to what central bankers are saying, and that's because probably they've had some influence in terms of asset prices over the last couple of years. I mean, I've got some sympathy for the view that had it not been for central bank intervention and immense amount of liquidity being injected into markets relative to history, whether it's the European Central Bank or the Federal Reserve, Bank of Japan, perhaps things would be less sensitive to macro events, but at the moment, yes, they are. And I find, markets are very correlated, and certain asset groupings are very correlated. The dollar weakness, for example, like we've seen recently, has had an immense impact on kind of emerging market equities, on currencies. Equities are very correlated, seems to like the oil price even, days when the oil price are up 5 or 10%, risk assets rally quite strongly. So it's just one of those periods where, volatility is alive and well. It certainly increased a lot. And I think it was almost a little bit too easy the last couple of years, in that volatility was quite low relative to history. And we just seem to be entering a period where things are going to be a little bit more choppy and a little bit more volatile. And I think it's going to remain like that for quite some time. So it's going to be a more difficult environment to manage other people's money because one will have to just manage this higher level of volatility going forward.
An interesting piece of information that was made public last week was the S&P Indices versus Active scorecard published in the US. And it suggests that South African fund managers have a better chance of beating the index or their benchmarks than their European or American counterpart. But it still says that only on the long term, over 5 years, only 25% of fund managers actually beat the benchmarks. Do you think that trend will continue?
Look, I think there's obviously been many studies done on this, and they all kind of confirm the same thing, is that, you know, broadly speaking, especially after fees, you know, active managers as a collective group underperforms kind of the passive indices. I mean, one has to say that, you know, if one goes to the passive debate, you must remember that all passive funds charge a fee as well. So 100% of passive funds underperform the market. I mean, they all underperform the market because of the fee that they charge. But there are some active managers that obviously perform very, very well and have kind of long, very established track records. And I think I've got some sympathy for the view that, you know, it's perhaps some markets are more efficient than others. I think the U.S. market is a very efficient market. That's why people struggle to beat that. You know, there are quarterly sales and trading updates. Information gets kind of disseminated very, very quickly, and investors act very aggressively to that information. There's a higher degree of dynamic, say, algorithmic trading, whereas you don't find that really in kind of emerging markets, and to a far lesser degree, for example, you're in the SA market. So maybe that is why SA fund managers have it a little bit easier to beat the market than US counterparts. I mean, Europe is an interesting one. I mean, we actually run a very good, very successful European strategy from our London office that has beaten the European market significantly over time, and we've often tried to internalize why that is. And I think it's because the European market is a very diverse market. I mean, I think you've got European banks on the one side, there's a lot of commodities and resources, but there's also lots of kind of very good, like, consumer staple companies. So it's quite a rich hunting ground in order to generate alpha. So I'm surprised that you're saying, you know, quite a few people struggle to beat European markets. But, you know, there will always be managers that tends to be better stock pickers than others. And yes, I mean, all managers go through a period of underperformance. I mean, even a 5-year period is not that long. But then again, the good managers tend to churn out the alpha.
If you look at the investor base in Investec funds, how many actually invest via financial advisors, and how many go directly or invest directly in Investec funds?
Tricky question that I'm not quite sure 100% what the answer is. I mean, my colleagues that kind of run our retail business will certainly give you a far more accurate answer.
Is it 50-50, 60-40?
No, the vast majority of funds comes via financial advisors. I mean, and it might be different for other asset managers, but if I look at kind of just like the normal equity unit trust that I co-manage, so kind of not looking at kind of the institutional assets, even in the retail equity unit trust, the relationships that we have with large kind of retail buyers, financial advisors, or kind of building block type of buyers, specialist buyers, that kind of dominates the asset base. And actually quite a very, very few clients come actually directly to us via our platform.
Well, it's one of the debates, because that would take away one layer of costs in investments, that the fee of the financial advisor.
Sure, sure. But, you know, I think a lot of people do find that, you know, they find that the help and assistance and guidance they get from their advisors to be very, very, very valuable, you know, because for the average investor, investing is a very scary thing. And, you know, the average man on the street actually don't know how to go about it. So I think everyone plays a bit of a role in the financial food chain, so to speak. But yes, you know, going direct and just cutting out the middleman is certainly the more fee or cost effective way, but it is quite a daunting task for the average person to do.
Another interesting piece of information that became available this week was that there seems to be a massive outflow of cash from South Africa to offshore markets. This is data from the Reserve Bank, and it shows that there were net outflows of cash every single quarter since 2013. That is 16 consecutive quarters, and it seems like the pace of these movement of cash offshore is accelerating. Are you seeing the same thing at Investec? Are your clients or your investors trying, you know, preferring offshore investments to local ones?
Yes, definitely. It's certainly a trend that we've experienced as well. If you look at the kind of just our retail fund range, the funds that have taken most of the flows are kind of those funds that are offshore, part of our global range. And it's as expected. You know, I think a lot of South Africans are concerned about domestic economic conditions, about the political situation, what's going to happen. There's a lot of uncertainty. The rand has moved significantly, and I would go so far to say that it's actually now that we are seeing the greatest desire to go for clients to go offshore, because they look at their statements in rand terms, and it didn't really matter whether you were invested in offshore equities or offshore cash or offshore bonds, as long as it was offshore and in some kind of developed market currency, not an emerging market currency like the Russian ruble or the Turkish lira, you would look at your statement and say, yes, this is a fantastic return. And we find that especially in the retail market, investors do tend to move relatively late. So it's not to say that, you know, this trend can't continue, but it's certainly a trend that's very powerful at the moment. And I think on balance, a lot of investors want to move out of the country now. Only time will tell whether it's the right decision to do it now versus if you look at what kind of we did in our multi-asset funds, and in fact, most of our competitors or peers in SA as well. A lot of the good kind of multi-asset or balance managers had large offshore exposure or non-rand exposure almost to the maximum amount already a couple of years ago.
But is that the right strategy? A lot of the retail investors would do that only to hedge against a weaker rand, not so much expecting, you know, alpha or higher growth than you would get on the local market. Do people understand there are also risks in the international market, and that the currency risk is maybe not only downward?
Yes, exactly. You know, that is certainly the way we feel at the moment. I mean, at this stage, I personally feel that it is certainly a lot more riskier to say I want 100% offshore exposure, because I actually had a conversation with a very good friend of mine that asked me this exact question about a week ago. I said, and it went something like, you know, I do have money to invest. Do I go 100% offshore now? And I said to him, you know, had you asked me 2-3 years ago, the answer would have been far easier to actually say yes, go and do it. But you know, if you look at offshore valuations, just like an SA, you know, valuations are kind of also more expensive than what they used to be. And you could argue that fundamentals are better, because we have a bit of a growth problem here in SA that's unlikely to go away anytime soon. So we do find actually offshore markets as a better, as kind of a richer hunting ground for opportunities if you look at company fundamentals. But you know, there are periods when, you know, the currency strengthens, and you might just find, you know, that maybe, you know, the rand has moved so much that maybe the rate of depreciation going forward is unlikely to be as great as what it's been historically. Even though I've got sympathy for the view that maybe the rand could be structurally weak over time, but I would say probably one should not expect the same, say, tailwind that the weaker currency gave your offshore investments going forward than like it's been historically.
Investec also recently launched a new international fund, the Investec Worldwide Flexible Fund. Is there still room for another fund? I read that there are more than 2,000 funds already in the market. Investec has a fair number of funds. Why a new fund, number one? And number two, what do you expect to achieve with this flexible fund?
A very good question. There are a lot of funds out there, and Investec certainly has a broad suite of funds. But if you look at our fund range, we have either predominantly local funds on the one side, so only funds that invest in rand assets, and then we have funds that are 100% offshore equity funds, offshore bond funds, offshore multi-asset funds. The flexible fund is somewhere in the middle, and the way I would explain it, or the easiest way to explain it, is we see it as an extension of a typical Regulation 28 compliant balance fund or multi-asset fund. So if you look at the SA market, most investors utilize balanced or multi-asset funds as a savings vehicle, but it is regulated. You know, you can only have 25% offshore, and with that comes a couple of implications, in that because you have to have 75% in rands, you're unlikely to actually in that offshore component for the average balance manager to invest too aggressively, for example, in other emerging markets, because otherwise you'll be doubling up on emerging market risk, given that SA itself is an emerging market. The other constraint is that you can only have 75% in say equities, but there are times when you might want kind of more. You might want 90%, and there are times when you want far less. So this is really a fund that tailored for South African clients. It's not a global fund that will be selling globally to other clients, but it's a type of fund where we try and take, you know, the difficult questions away from the client, in that we will make the currency call on their behalf. We will decide, do we want to be 70% invested in offshore assets, or do we only want to be 20% invested in offshore assets? Do we want to have half the currency in rand, or do we want to have 80% of the currency in rands because we think the rand is kind of oversold, or if the rand is, or our view over time that, you know, the rand will weaken significantly, we will have a healthy exposure in terms of non-rand exposure. So it's a completely flexible mandate, but it kind of falls somewhere in between our global range and our local range.
How long does it take to establish a fund? What has the reaction been in the few months that it has been available?
Look, it's only been available since this month, so literally only a couple of days it's up and running. It takes a long time to launch a fund because, you know, certainly what we do here in Investec, we kind of give it a lot of thought. We think, you know, is it the prudent time to launch it? What are we trying to achieve with it? How can we manage it? Who should run it? So this has been something that's been in the making for, I would say, I kind of have been involved in like the process for the best part of almost 2 years. So that gives you the an idea of kind of how long it takes for us to do it. Because with a flexible mandate, you know, you're starting with a blank sheet of paper, and that in itself brings a little bit of risk. So one has to be very clearly defined what you're trying to achieve with it. And we've thought long and hard about it. You know, what a worldwide flexible fund for a South African client really should be. And again, to us, it's a multi-asset fund. It's not 100% equity fund. It's got the objective of long-term capital growth. But given that we have, you know, more opportunity for diversification than, for example, a typical Regulation 28 compliant balance fund, we should be able to construct a more efficient portfolio. And with that, one should be able to actually deliver, for example, slightly higher returns than our Reg 28 compliant funds at a similar level of risk.
Looking at the Investec Equity Fund, this is one of the flagship funds you manage. It has performed well in the short term and medium term, but I just want to focus quickly on Naspers. Is the biggest shareholding, was the company that represents the biggest shareholding, a pretty big 14.6%. Why the magnitude of that investment in Naspers, and aren't you not concerned that it may pose a bit of a risk?
Look, it's a very good question. We certainly ask ourselves that internally quite often. Look, if you look at the history of the positioning, I mean, we typically don't have more than 10% in a particular fund, but obviously the stock has done so well, and with growth over time, it is kind of crept up to the position that you see at the moment. Quite interestingly enough, given that Naspers is now by far the biggest stock in the market, if you look at the weight that Naspers has in the shareholder weighted index or the all share index, one could actually say that we are underweight the index, but, you know, we're not closet index managers. We don't start with the index and then take kind of bets on kind of either side. We construct the portfolio just in absolute terms. So, I mean, we're still very comfortable with the outlook for Naspers. We think it's one of the few businesses on the exchange that has multiple years of growth ahead of it. And, you know, I would go so far to say that, you know, it's not as cheap as what it used to be. And it's always a difficult stock for value managers to get their heads around. But if I look at Naspers today, you know, you're basically just buying the Tencent business. And we really like the growth prospects of Tencent. We think, you know, they are transitioning from essentially a gaming company that started obviously in PC gaming and then went on to mobile gaming. They're transitioning into almost more of an advertising business in time. And it's kind of the Facebook model. So if you look at Facebook today, almost 80% of revenue comes from advertising. We don't know if Tencent will get there, but we think a large part will come from advertising, which is not in the price. And then you get all of the other non-Tencent assets is not valued whatsoever. So one could actually make a bit of a value argument. So we quite like it.
Just lastly, what are you currently buying on the JSE and what are you selling?
Well, obviously I can't tell you exactly, but what I will say is that we've made significant changes to the holdings in the equity fund over the last couple of months. I mean, market conditions have changed quite a bit. You know, some things that have where it's been almost like one way traffic, not to have had any commodities and resources, which was the positioning we actually had in place for most part of 2014 and 2015. I would go so far to say that we think it's quite risky not to have any exposure to resources at the moment. So we don't have, you know, a significant amount, but you'll see in the top 10, for example, a share like Anglo Gold, and below the top 10, we've got shares like Glencore and Billiton, and those have all been kind of recent additions because, you know, the shares have done have really performed poorly, and we're just asking the question whether it's still say prudent to have nothing, and we think the answer is no. And then, you know, the sales have been rather more stock specific. You know, it's been on the banking side of things where we've been, say, invested in a stock like First Rand for 7 or 8 years. It's kind of been one of the top holdings across our funds, and like you don't find it in our top 10 anymore. We think a large part of that investment thesis has played out. And then some of the Rand hedges, that's been great to own. It's been one way traffic with the Rand weakening so much. We're struggling to find the compelling investment opportunity there compared to a couple of years ago. So we're slightly more sector neutral now than what we've been before.
But what is absent in the top 10 are companies like Richemont, SAB, Sasol, companies that really performed well since you know, for the last few years, but have been sold down because of the extreme valuations.
Yeah, I think, you know, so it comes up to the point, you know, we have done quite well. I mean, the equity fund is one of the better performing funds in its category, and that's been done without any kind of offshore exposure. The fund has had no offshore exposure during this time, so it's been 100% SA invested fund. But we're just a bit concerned that perhaps the winners of yesteryear might not be the winners of tomorrow. I think that so positioning among fund managers in some instances have become incredibly consensus. You know, the anti-resources trade, the pro Rand hedge trade. I think to run the same exposure to the extent what we've had the last 2-3 years is perhaps not the prudent way going forward.
Thank you, Reinhard. That was Reinhard Ruert, a fund manager at Investec.